The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, Brian Massey and myself take some time during MAGFest 2014 to sit down with Brad Jones, also known as the Cinema Snob. We discuss, among other things, the joys of Halloween 3, the horrors of Nuki, and the sad truth that strip clubs tend not to hire the best writers. I'm Jordan Hazelwood, and you just got to the good part, so strap in and sit tight, because you are boldly going nowhere.
How's it going? I'm Brian Massey here, also known as One Drunk Geek, doing our MAGFest interviews, sitting next to the Synapse, actually.
The Jordan Hazelwood, if you haven't caught my video review show yet, but there's still time.
Word. And I am sitting across the beds.
We're in bed together.
We are in bed together with Brad Jones, also known as the Cinema Snob.
Hey, how's it going, man?
What's happening? First and foremost, your voice, it's deep.
It is. It is. That was probably how I got a job in radio when I was 18 years old. Worked radio for 4 years and actually really missed that. But, you know, I get to do voice work and stuff like that now, so that's fun.
All right, cool. A little chestnut that I didn't know about. Tell us about your radio work.
I took a vocational course when I was in high school, and it was, one of them was a multimedia class, one of them was a radio class, and I went to go audition to be a DJ at the oldies station in town, which worked out for me because I listened to a lot of music from 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's pretty much all I listened to, honestly. And so I applied for it, got it, and I was a radio DJ for about 4 years. I stopped because I moved out to California briefly, and I still miss doing that. I do. There was one night where I DJed at a strip club. That was interesting. The only thing about it was, it was typical stuff. Like, you lazy gentleman, put your hands together for Mercedes. You know, stuff like that. But they gave you a script of jokes to say. And they gave you a script of jokes to say, and it was just... God. Like one of them was am I allowed to like curse on here? Okay, all right. It was one of them, and I'll never forget it because oh my God. The stripper was on the pole and everything. And I was like, you've heard of corn dog on it or hot dog on a stick? Well, this is pussy on a pool. Like, oh my God, really? Who the hell wrote this? I had to say it, and I did. And got paid, so that was nice.
All right. Let's go into what you're obviously known for, which is your work with That Guy with the Glasses. Cinema Snob, you've been doing the Cinema Snob now for how long?
2007. I've been making movies since the late 90s, but the Cinema Snob's really what took off. I started doing that in 2007, and... it was a slow build up in terms of its fan base. It took a few years, but I loved doing it. I just really enjoyed doing it, so I kept doing it. You know, eventually it started paying off to the extent where it's my full time job. The website is
now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like the first episode was on YouTube, was it not? And it was like 5 minutes long, and it cuts off at the end.
Oh God, yeah.
I'm extraordinarily familiar with your first episode of Burial Ground Knights of Terror. The reason being is that I listen to a lot of like your midnight movie reviews, and I'll get back to that in more time. Like, I listen to those while I'm falling asleep because I really like having like podcasts or something.
I've done that too.
And your video service, if the most recent video plays, it starts off at the beginning. So I've lost count of the many times I had to get up out of bed and walk over to the computer while it's barking at me. Burial Ground Knights of Terror.
There's
a bag.
I feel like I should apologize for how many times you've seen that episode. The first couple years I was doing the show, I was on YouTube, and copyright reasons, I got kicked off, and Spoonie, Noah Antweiler from Spoonie Experiment, suggested, you know, why don't you just start your own website? And I did, and it was
That's how I found you.
Yeah, you know, getting kicked off YouTube was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me, you know? And, Jesus, it was a short video. It was like five, but at the time there was a time limit on YouTube videos. It had to be under 10 minutes. That's why those videos are written differently than they are now. And also, I wasn't used to comedy. You can tell. Jeez, I can tell. I was not used to comedy at the time. I did the show as a lark. I thought it would be funny to do and kind of spotlight these exploitation movies in a comedic way, because at that point, not a lot of people on YouTube were really doing that. And I was used to doing thrillers. I had done a few really pretty dark movies. I did a movie called Freak Out, a movie called Cheap, and a movie called Midnight Heat. And my experience in acting was all dramatic stuff, very dark thrillers. Like, at that point, I think I'd played a serial killer in, like, three movies. So it took me a little bit to find any kind of, like, comedic timing or anything.
I know that, like, The Cinema Snob was supposed to be, like, a parody of, like, you know, critics who just hold things up to be, like, such high art. Like, is there a point that you realize where, like, holy shit, I'm actually starting to bleed into the character, like, at all? Or, like, has that ever been like that for you at all?
Where I'm when I sound mad in real life, I'll probably sound a little like The Cinema Snob, because The Cinema Snob gets mad. So, I mean, it's still my voice. It's still my tone and everything. So I'll kind of sound a little like him. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's been instances where things I'd say in real life might also be something that The Cinema Snob has said. But the reasons would probably be different. I mean, yeah, it is making fun of it. Really, it's a spoof off of, like, the type of movie review that, like, Roger Ebert did for Friday the 13th Part 4. That's really what inspired it. And I would never, me personally, would never judge a slasher movie like that, like he did. I mean, yeah, there's certainly some bad ones, but not for reasons he gave. Okay, take for instance Nuki, which was it's still the worst movie I've seen. It's the worst movie I've ever. It's definitely the worst movie I've done for that show. Certainly, a lot of the cracks and jokes and stuff like that, and really how pissed I was in that video, really kind of did reflect my feeling when I was watching it. So in that regard, yeah, there's certainly some times when I can kind of use that character to really just tell how much I can't stand that freaking movie, Nuki.
I knew of Nuki from a review on a website that gave it -50 out of 10.
That's generous. That's really generous.
So right now you're up to episode, what do you think you're going to do for 300?
I don't know. The way that I kind of do, like, the benchmark episodes, like, you know, every 50 or so, is that usually, like, you know, okay, episode 50 through 55, it was Pierre Kirby week. 150 through 155 was ET week, and which is when Nuki came in. And so on the 50s, usually then I'll do like a theme week, and then for, like, say 100, 200, that's when it's typically like one movie, one pretty notable movie for the types that I do on there. And then I usually, like, split it up into two. 250, I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do for 250. I definitely don't. I kind of have an idea what I might do for 300, but I'm definitely not 100% on it yet.
Oh, thank you. I have to say that as of late, I've really gone for my aforementioned midnight movie reviews that you're recording in your car. Now, since I've started to follow in the footsteps of the internet movie reviewing, my forefathers, you included, I've witnessed firsthand how much work and effort it is to write scripts, to film and to edit. And I'm lucky to get an episode out every 7 weeks or so. And you've really hit a sweet spot with, you know, you've assembled your circle of friends to, you know, see recent movies, to just pile in your car and turn on the camera and review or riff about them live. It's endlessly rewatchable. I honestly can't believe that, like, no one had thought of this sooner. May I ask you about the story of the origin of the Midnight Movie Reviews?
I'm glad you like them. You know what? It happened by accident. It was complete accident, because it was 2011, I think, and the summer of 2011, when Thor came out. And that was the first, technically the first episode of that show. And but before that, ever since I started the site, I'd done vlog reviews just by myself, you know, just by myself. I'd go see something every weekend and then I'd sit there and just talk about it. And Thor had a midnight screening, as, you know, movies of that kind typically do. And so I was like, you know, this would be kind of funny. Like, you know, me and Jared or this will be different anyway. Me and Jared will go see it at midnight. And then hell, we'll talk about it in the car afterwards. That video was the shortest one, I think. It was only like 9 minutes. But that was because the battery was dying, so we had to keep it pretty brief. And early episodes of that are a little, because I'm usually holding the camera instead of setting it on the dashboard like we are now. But and then I was like, well, that was maybe I'll start doing that, like, anytime that there's a midnight, you know, maybe we'll make something out of that. It'll be different anyway. Change things up. And then the next week we noticed they were also doing it for Bridesmaids and Priest. I was only expecting they were just going to do it for, like, Thor, Transformers 3 came out that summer, things like that. I didn't expect them for them to literally do it for all of them, and they did. Once they did it for Bridesmaids, I'm like, are they doing it for everything that comes out? I was like, that's okay, and maybe we can make something out of that. What the hell? Like, because I always look for an excuse to get out of the house and do so. And that's I love that show. Even when I have to see something that's crap, it gets me out of the house. I hang out with my friends. We sit in the car afterwards. We have a good time. You know, whether we like the movie or whether we don't like it, you know, it's fun to talk about something you like and it's fun to talk about something you don't like. Because when you're talking about something you don't like, you can get some good material. You can kind of riff on it a bit, joke around, stuff like that, or be legitimately pissed off. That's happened. Because it's your immediate reaction after seeing it. You know, we do. It's immediate. It's we go from the theater to the car, we hit record, and we talk about it. So at that point, you are your most emotional after seeing a movie, whether it's something you love or, in Transformers 3's case, something that's really pissed you off. So that's kind of fun, having a big reaction like that. But that was its origin is just that it kind of happened by accident. And like summertime, it was just summer, and then they stopped doing it. But then starting in 2013, they started doing it year round.
All right, thank you. I can think of one instance in my Cinema Snob fandom that was I really felt a little strange, a little uncertain. That would be last Halloween, when I noticed that you were reviewing Halloween. I think my first thought was, is this going to be his last episode? Because I've heard you talk about Halloween a lot, in just piecing together from the Videodrome podcast. Radiodrome podcast. And of course bits and pieces from other episodes. I was really afraid that this was like where the snake was going to start eating its tail. It was a pretty good episode, even though I kind of saw all the jokes coming, admittedly.
Sure.
It's like, gee, I wonder if he's going to point out how Roger Ebert really likes this movie and disparaged all of its League of Imitators.
Yeah.
Or I wonder if he'll point out the palm trees,
yeah,
sort of thing. But, all right, I guess the question I should ask is, do you think you've come up with an explanation or justification why so many film critics fell in love with this movie and turned their noses down on all the slasher boom that it inspired?
Yeah, absolutely. And I did Halloween because that was kind of my gimmick on the show last year, was that I was kind of going after like Friday the 13th, Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that, because I like playing around with that character and kind of making him kind of really episodes where he really makes fun of the snobby like nature of stuff, like kind of poking fun at actual reviews of the movie. And in Halloween's case, I think a lot of people certainly I think there's a lot of reasons why people really, I mean, it is a great, it's a classic, it is. I'm not I did not do that episode to try to demean that movie in any way, shape or form at all, just more so make fun of like critics and whatnot. But you know, it's significantly more well made. It's significantly more well made than a lot of different slashers. It's certainly more ambitious. It's suspenseful, even. It also, in terms of acting, too, it's very much a well acted movie. It's a very mature movie. But it does have a lot of, you know what? It has a lot of tropes, more so in Halloween than in, some of the off the top of my head, okay, let's say like Friday the 13th, you know, I mean, like it does to me have more so like that stereotype of like the virginal heroine versus like the one who has the ones who want to have sex. They have sex, immediately get killed. It's incredibly prevalent in Halloween. But to be fair, that's a slasher movie that inspired a lot of these other movies, you know what I mean? So yeah, that you kind of play with that, like, you know, people got so mad about that cliche in the 80s, but you know, it's okay when Halloween does it. But you know, to be fair, it's a much more ambitious film, and it was an early movie that did a lot of those things. I think it's perfectly understandable why somebody who is not typically a slasher movie fan will really like Halloween, but might not like Madman or Stage Fright or something like that. The tone of them are very different.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you're a big Halloween 3 Season of the Witch fan. Really briefly, because I know I honestly wasn't a fan of it, you know, because...
Sure.
If I were to call you out, it's like, why would you, and just short, like, defend it, because I know you did a video about it, but...
'80s Dan.
What you said was something along the lines of, like, you know, well, it was different, and it was going to start a whole different line of, like, Halloween-themed movies.
If I recall the story correctly, John Carpenter intended for Halloween to be a series of completely disconnected stories. And yet, I guess the first one was so successful, he's like, okay, well, I'll bring Michael Myers back just one more time, then I'm back on track. I guess by when 3 rolled around, we kind of were expecting the guy in the Captain Kirk mask. I guess it just wasn't what the audience was anticipating, so I'm sure that's a considerable contribution.
I love Halloween 3. I think it's entertaining as hell. I do. I think it's original. It's very unpredictable. It is. I love it so much more than I do the actual, because I mean, I honestly think of it really as its own entity, because it is. The intent of it is for it to be its own entity. It just happens to be called Halloween 3. I wish to God they went with the anthology route. One, I like Halloween 3 way better than I do the sequels that actually have Michael Myers in them. And if that's what they came up with for Halloween 3, this story about this evil toy company and these masks and they have to do with Stonehenge and witchcraft and everything, I'm like, what the hell else would they have come up with? Holy crap. Like, I want to see where it goes from here. I love Halloween 3. I think it's suspenseful. I think the violence in it's very fun. It's a very 80s stylized version of like maybe like a 50s horror movie you would kind of see, with like the kooky small town and, you know, crazy millionaire who's got this evil plan and to like wipe out children. That's the thing too, like Connell, I'm like, you know, when you break it down, Connell Cochran's way more evil than Michael Myers. Like, Michael Myers is like, yeah, he's evil, he's definitely evil, but Connell Cochran will kill your children. Connell Cochran, like, he's gonna kill all the children in the either the states or the world, where the hell this commercial is getting broadcast, if it's just domestic or if it's worldwide. And then at the end, it kind of leaves it open to where he did it, like he got away with it. And so, and plus Dan O'Hurley, he is amazing in that. That speech that he gives about the history of Halloween is to me still spine tingling the way he delivers that. It's a far-fetched movie. It's certainly cartoonish, but it knows it is. There are parts in the movie where it kind of makes fun of some of the holes that it has in it. And so I'm a huge fan. Every season I break it out and I watch it.
All right, cool. Well, we're not going to try and hold you up for too long, so I guess out of all the movies that you've seen in 2013, what was your favorite and what was your least favorite?
Among my favorites would be Lovelace, The Conjuring, Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle, Pacific Rim. I don't know if this will make the list, but I mean, it might, but I don't know if it'll make the list, but I really loved Iceman with Michael Shannon. When I make my worst list, you know, among them will be stuff like, you know, Die Hard 5. Crap for this, of course, but Man of Steel is going to be on there. I don't care. I'm used to it. Man of Steel will be on there. You know, stuff like, you know, Movie 43, of course. I saw that.
I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was one I couldn't even get mad afterwards because it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. Grudge match is. Oh, that's definitely going to be on there. That God, I damn it. I hate a grudge match. 47 Ronin will probably be on there. I'll have to write down the bad movies that I saw over the year and really take a look and put them in some kind of order.
All right, Brad. Well, thank you for taking some time out and talking to us. And for Castaway Studios, I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
All right. Catch you later.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.
Is it Monday again? Are you hungry? Come on down to Mellow Mushroom Adams Morgan in our nation's capital. Mellow Mushroom has live music, trivia, bingo, and a beer club that provides member-only rewards for exploring the craft selection of 24 drafts and numerous canned and bottled brews. Most famous for their hand-tossed pizzas, pretzels baked in a stone oven. They also have calzones, hoagies, and salads using the highest quality of ingredients. Options are available for vegetarians, vegans, kids, and those on a gluten-free diet. Like them on Facebook at Mellow Mushroom and follow them on Twitter at Mellow Admo. Tell them that Castaway Studios sent you and get 20% off your bill on a Monday. That's Mellow Mushroom in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Tell them that Castaway Studios sent you.